Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. I want you to imagine you're just staring at your network logs.
Right.
Right, just a normal Tuesday in the SOC.
Exactly. You see Microsoft Teams data syncing. You see SharePoint files updating in the background. Your Java applications are doing their normal routines.
Yeah, it looks perfectly fine.
It looks perfectly normal. But behind that exact legitimate network traffic, an extortion platform is quietly stripping your company's deepest engineering secrets.
Which is just, I mean, it's wild to think about.
It really is. We have a very high signal cybersecurity briefing for you today.
Mm-hmm.
And our mission is pretty clear. We need to equip defenders with the intelligence to stop three new, highly sophisticated attacker actions.
Yeah, because if you look through the intel, the traditional perimeter, it's completely gone.
Right. The days of just dropping noisy malware are over. They are taking your most trusted internal systems and just, you know, turning them into their own operational infrastructure.
And that paradigm shift is really the most dangerous reality that defenders are facing right now. The new battleground, it isn't the firewall at the edge of your network anymore.
No.
It's the very software your teams implicitly trust every single day. Threat actors have realized that, you know, the best way to evade detection isn't to write stealthier malware.
Right. It's to subvert your legitimate environments so the malicious activity looks identical to daily business.
Exactly. It fundamentally forces us to rethink how we approach threat hunting.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the absolute heart of enterprise manufacturing. We are analyzing a briefing from ReliaQuest today regarding product lifecycle management software.
Specifically, PTC Windchill and Flex PLM servers.
Right. And for anyone outside a heavy engineering space, PLM software is basically the digital vault.
Oh, absolutely.
It holds the CAD blueprints, the proprietary formulas, the unreleased product designs. I mean, literally everything a company builds.
And attackers are going straight for that vault.
Yeah. They're using a critical flaw, tracked as CVE-2026-12569.
And the severity of this flaw really cannot be overstated. It carries a CVSS score of 9.3 out of 10.
Wow, 9.3. So what is actually failing here?
The core mechanism failing is improper input validation. So to put it simply, the server accepts data from the network and it processes it without rigorously checking if that data is safe or, you know, malformed.
So it just trusts whatever is handed to it.
Exactly. Because of this architectural blind spot, an attacker can just send a specifically crafted network request that forces the server to execute arbitrary code.
Wait, they don't even need a stolen password.
No password. They don't need to phish an employee. They just need the ability to send packets to the server.
Wow. But if I'm a defender, I'm used to setting up tripwires based on anomalous logins, right? Or like weird IP addresses trying to authenticate.
Right. Traditional indicators.
Yeah. But if the attacker doesn't need prior access to drop this code, how do I even begin to catch that initial compromise?
Well, that is the nightmare scenario for a security operations center. The initial vector is literally just web traffic.
Just standard HTTP.
Exactly. And an advisory from a coalition including Ransom ISAC, eCrime.c, and Diffused attributes this exploitation to the CLOP ransomware operation.
Wait, CLOP? Like the ransomware group?
Yeah. But what matters to defenders is what CLOP does the millisecond they get that arbitrary code execution. They don't just blindly encrypt the server.
Oh, right. They deploy a Java Server Pages or JSP web shell.
Right.
Let's pause there for a second because we throw the term web shell around a lot in this industry. But a JSP web shell isn't just a simple script running a command line, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, ReliaQuest calls this a fully equipped extortion platform. So what is the actual mechanism making it so powerful?
So a JSP web shell is essentially a piece of code that allows an attacker to interact with the server's underlying operating system through a web interface.
Because Windchill is built on Java.
Exactly. The attackers drop a JSP file into a directory where the server already expects to find web application files.
Oh, I see.
So the server actually compiles and runs the attacker's code as if it were a legitimate part of the Windchill application itself. Wow.
And from there, it becomes an extortion platform because of how methodically it maps the environment.
It's looking for the intellectual property.
Right. Actively searching the database for the most valuable IP. And crucially, it targets the Windchill key store.
Okay. The key store being the place where the application stores all of its own internal passwords and like cryptographic keys to talk to other databases.
Correct. What's fascinating here is that the web shell uses the application's native Java environment to decrypt every single credential stored within that key store.
So it just scoops up the keys to the rest of the kingdom.
Yep. And it goes even deeper than that. To run further post-exploitation tools, the attackers utilize a custom Java class loader.
Okay. For those of us who aren't, you know, hardcore Java developers, what does a class loader actually do in this context? Why is a custom one so dangerous?
Well, in the Java virtual machine, a class loader is the mechanism responsible for finding and loading the actual code.
Right, the classes into memory so they can be executed. Normally, the system loads trusted classes from local files on the disk.
Makes sense.
But by injecting a custom class loader, the attackers can feed malicious bytecode directly into the server's memory over the network.
Ah, so it never touches the hard drive.
Exactly. The malicious code never touches the hard drive as a recognizable executable file. It just runs entirely within the trusted memory space of the Java process.
So it's completely invisible to a traditional antivirus scan that's, you know, looking for bad files on the disk. It's less like a burglar picking a lock from the outside and more like, I don't know, slipping a rogue manager into your HR department.
I like that analogy.
Right. Because this rogue manager has the right corporate badge. They use the native internal systems and they are officially authorized to request the master keys. The security guards at the front door won't stop them because the threat is coming from inside the bureaucracy itself.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. I mean, Klopp is puppeteering the PLM software's native environment. The actionable intelligence for defenders here is that finding this activity requires monitoring native component behavior. Mm. You absolutely cannot rely on static signatures anymore.
Right. You have to baseline how your PLM software is supposed to operate and then look for anomalies.
Exactly. Like a Java process suddenly extracting the entire key store or spawning unexpected child processes.
Well, Klopp's approach shows a terrifying mastery of these niche engineering platforms. But Windchill is a highly specialized tool.
It is.
The logical evolution of this hide-in-plain-sight tactic is to apply it to something every single employee has running on their machine right now.
Right.
Which brings us to a wildly sophisticated threat targeting the most universally trusted applications in the modern enterprise.
We are talking about the research from Ontinue's Cyber Defense Center, detailing a campaign from July 2026.
Yes, this one is crazy.
They uncovered a previously undocumented Python implant framework called Twinloot.
Twinloot.
Yeah, and if Klopp is hiding inside Java, Twinloot takes that concept of environmental camouflage and applies it to your entire cloud infrastructure.
Let's look at the anatomy of this implant, because it is basically an absolute fortress. It's written in Python, but it's hardened using a tool called PyArmor.
Right.
I assume the mechanism there is designed to just give security analysts a massive headache.
Oh, a huge headache. PyArmor is an obfuscation tool. It encrypts the Python scripts and binds them to a protective wrapper.
Okay.
So when a security researcher or an automated sandbox tries to reverse engineer the code to see what it does, PyArmor ensures the underlying logic remains just a scrambled, unreadable mess.
It just raises the cost of analysis significantly.
It does. But the obfuscation is really just the protective shell. The truly staggering engineering here is in the command and control, or C2, infrastructure.
Right, because usually when an implant gets on a machine, it has to phone home, right? It reaches out to some shady IP address or an obscure domain to ask the attacker for instructions.
Exactly. That's the standard playbook.
But Twinloot doesn't do that at all. It routes its entire C2 communication through trusted Microsoft services. It uses SharePoint online file dead drops via the Microsoft Graph API.
It's brilliant, honestly.
Break down that mechanism for us. How does a dead drop work in cloud syncing?
So think of classic spycraft, right? Where two agents never meet. They just leave messages in a hidden allo tree.
Like a drop site.
Exactly. Twinloot applies that to SharePoint. The attacker authenticates to a legitimate, compromised Microsoft 365 tenant and drops a text or config file containing malicious commands into a specific SharePoint folder.
Right.
Then on the victim's endpoint, the Twinloot implant uses the Microsoft Graph API.
Which is the official programmatic way to interact with Microsoft Cloud Services.
Right. It uses that API to routinely check that SharePoint folder. The implant downloads the file, executes the commands, and then uploads the stolen data as a new file back to SharePoint, where the attacker then downloads it.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because I have to push back on this a bit.
Okay, go for it.
I understand that the connection is going to Microsoft. But surely Microsoft's own internal heuristics, or even the company's network logging, would flag something suspicious.
You would think so.
Right. Like, if a Python script is generating rapid-fire C2 beacons to check a folder every 5 seconds, wouldn't the native logging catch that anomaly? Are you telling me defenders are entirely blind here?
You're hitting on the fundamental problem because the attackers actually anticipated that exact defense.
Of course they did.
They don't just use Python to make a raw API call. The traffic to and from the Graph API is driven using a headless instance of the victim's own Microsoft Edge browser.
Oh my God. Headless meaning there's no graphical interface, no window popping up to alert the user.
Exactly.
It's just the browser engine running invisibly in the background.
Yes, and because it is the actual Edge browser installed on the victim's machine, it natively inherits the user's session cookies.
Wow.
It gets the primary refresh tokens and all the legitimate browser headers. Furthermore, the attackers use sleep timers and jitter to randomize the check-ins.
So it mimics the natural syncing behavior of a user collaborating on a heavy SharePoint document.
Exactly. This raises an important question about living off the cloud. To your network firewall and even to Microsoft's behavioral logs, it looks absolutely identical to everyday employee traffic.
That is wild. And it gets even wilder when the attackers want interactive, real-time access. The briefing notes they route that traffic through WebRTC data channels relayed by Microsoft Teams turn servers.
Yeah, this part is incredible.
I mean, I know WebRTC is what powers browser-based video calls, but how on earth are they weaponizing a Teams turn server?
Well, a turn server is just a relay. In a legitimate Microsoft Teams call, if two users can't connect directly due to strict firewalls, the Teams architecture uses a turn server to relay the audio and video packets between them.
Okay, that makes sense for video calls.
To-unloot hijacks this architectural feature. It establishes a WebRTC connection through the legitimate Teams turn servers, but instead of sending video, it sends command and control data through the encrypted data channel.
They are literally using the infrastructure designed to make your daily video meetings work as a secure, encrypted tunnel to bypass your firewall.
Yeah.
The network camouflage is practically flawless. So how does a defender actually catch this? If the network layer is the dead end, we have to rely on the endpoint, right? What is the actual machine doing that gives the game away?
The post-exploitation actions on the host are really the only place TwinLoot makes noise. Defenders have to monitor for process anomalies.
Like what?
For instance, why is an obfuscated Python script suddenly launching a hidden instance of minsedge.exe?
Right, that shouldn't happen.
But more importantly, you monitor for the payload capabilities. The Antinu report details that TwinLoot harvests Windows credentials by creating pixel-perfect fake lock screens.
Okay, let's talk about the mechanism of that fake lock screen. It's not just a web page made to look like Windows, is it?
No, it is a desktop-level hijacking. The Python script forces the user's active session to lock. Then it immediately draws a borderless full-screen graphical window over the desktop that perfectly mimics the native Windows hello or password entry screen.
Oh, that's nasty.
When the confused user types in their password, the Python script captures the plaintext keystrokes, saves them, and then passes the credentials to the real Windows authentication subsystem so the user logs in normally, none the wiser.
That is terrifying. And then the briefing mentions it offers a reverse SOC KS5 pivot. Let's clarify what that means because it sounds like heavy networking jargon, but the concept is critical for understanding the risk here.
Sure. A traditional SOCKS proxy is a server that routes your traffic to the internet. You use it to hide your origin.
Right, standard privacy stuff.
Well, a reverse SOCKS5 pivot flips the direction. The TwinLoot implant on the infected laptop reaches out to the attacker's server, establishing that trusted outbound connection.
Okay.
Once the connection is open, the attacker uses it as a two-way pipe. They can route their own malicious tools from the outside, through the infected laptop, and deeper into the corporate network.
So the infected endpoint essentially becomes a router for the attacker.
Exactly, sitting safely behind the corporate firewall.
The takeaway for defenders is incredibly stark here. The network logs will swear up and down that an employee is just on a Microsoft Teams call updating a SharePoint file.
Completely benign.
But the endpoint telemetry will show Python throwing up a fake lock screen and opening a reverse tunnel. You absolutely cannot defend modern infrastructure without robust endpoint behavior monitoring.
It's non-negotiable at this point.
But, you know, the evasion tactics we see in TwinLoot are really just the warm-up act for what happens when we look at the infrastructure companies are rushing to build right now.
Absolutely.
We've covered legacy engineering. We've covered current office staples. Now we are looking at the foundational architecture of artificial intelligence.
Which brings us to our third piece of intelligence, focusing on MLflow.
Yes.
For context, MLflow is a wildly popular open source platform designed to manage the machine learning lifecycle.
All right, so if a company's building AI, their data scientists and engineers are likely using MLflow to track experiments, package code, and manage their model registries.
Exactly, and it is currently under active attack. There are two critical vulnerabilities, but the one witnessing severe malicious exploitation is CVE-2026-64849.
Yeah.
This allows an attacker to directly reach cloud metadata services and exfiltrate highly sensitive cloud credentials.
And the way it achieves this is through a flaw in MLflow's model registry webhooks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's break that down real quick. What is a webhook in this context, and how is the attacker manipulating it?
So a webhook is simply an automated event-driven callback. When a specific event happens, like, say, a data scientist registering a new AI model MLflow uses a webhook to send an HTTP request to another service, basically saying, hey, a new model is ready.
Got it.
The vulnerability here allows an unauthenticated attacker to create or modify these webhooks, essentially turning the MLflow server into a proxy. This is known as a server-side request forgery, or SSRF. The attacker forces the MLflow server to make a web request on their behalf, and they point that request at the internal network.
And specifically, they pointed at the cloud provider's metadata service, which, for anyone managing AWS, Azure, or Google Cloud, the metadata service is that famous internal IP address, right?
Mm.
Usually 169.254.169.254.
Yes, that exact one.
Why is that specific address the holy grail for an attacker?
Because that internal non-routable IP address is how the cloud server learns about itself. It is a service provided by the cloud hosting platform, and it holds incredibly sensitive configuration data,
including the temporary IAM access credentials assigned to that specific machine.
Exactly. Normally, an attacker on the outside internet cannot reach that IP address. The cloud provider just blocks it.
Right.
But by using the SSRF vulnerability, the attacker tells the MLflow server, go fetch data from 169.254.169.254.
So the MLflow server, which is sitting inside the trusted cloud boundary, asks the metadata service for the credential. The metadata service just hands them over because the request came from a trusted internal machine.
It doesn't know any better.
And then the webhook passes those deep cloud secrets right back out to the attacker.
That is the exact flow. And what is particularly frustrating for defenders is the mechanism this exploit uses to bypass prior security patches.
Oh, because MLflow's developers had previously tried to block requests to that specific 169 IP address, didn't they?
They did, but the attackers use a web redirect trick.
Wait, how does the redirect trick work? Does it confuse the URL parser or something?
It actually bypasses the parser entirely.
Really?
Yeah, the attacker points the webhook to an external server they control, let's say attack.com. The MLflow security filter looks at attacker.com, decides it's not the banned internal IP, and allows the request.
Okay.
But when MLflow connects to attacker.com, the attacker server immediately responds with an HTTP 302 redirect, telling MLflow, actually, the data you want is located at 169.254.169.254. And the underlying HTTP library inside MLflow obediently follows the redirect, completely bypassing the application security check, and grabs the metadata.
That is incredibly slick and incredibly dangerous.
Mm.
But, you know, the detail in this briefing that should make every security leader sit up straight is the timeline.
Yes.
Global honeypot telemetry indicates that attackers began actively targeting cloud-hosted MLflow systems with this exploit within hours of the CVE being assigned on August 17th, 2026.
Within hours. I mean, that metric alone demands a total overhaul of how organizations manage AI infrastructure.
So what does this all mean? The paint isn't even dry on the vulnerability warning, literally issued 2 days ago, and automated scanners are already ripping the doors off cloud-hosted AI registries.
Yeah.
It used to be the defenders had a week, maybe a month, to test a patch, see if it broke anything, and roll it out.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the patch window no longer exists.
It's gone.
It has shrunk from weeks to days to mere hours. Attackers understand that the business side of organizations is spinning up AI infrastructure at breakneck speeds.
Because everyone is desperate to leverage machine learning right now.
Exactly. And often this infrastructure is deployed by data science teams outside the purview of traditional IT security. It gets treated as a protected experimental sandbox.
But as this CVE proves, an MLflow registry running in the cloud is not a sandbox.
Not at all.
It has access to cloud metadata. It holds the keys to the broader environment. If it is compromised, the attacker isn't confined to the AI lab. They have the credentials to pivot into your production databases and your core infrastructure.
Right. It is tier one mission critical architecture from the second it is turned on.
Man, we've covered a tremendous amount of ground in this briefing. And the through line connecting all of this intelligence is Stark.
Very Stark.
We looked at Clop ransomware leveraging improper input validation in Windchill PLM software, right?
Yeah.
Dropping JSP web shells and custom Java class loaders to natively map and decrypt engineering vaults.
Yeah.
We examined Twinloot using PyArmor obfuscation, headless edge browsers, and Teams turn servers to build a flawless C2 network disguised as legitimate Microsoft 365 traffic.
Which is still crazy to me.
And finally, we saw attackers exploiting SSRF redirects and MLflow webhooks to instantly drain cloud metadata credentials.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in every scenario, the attackers are weaponizing our own trusted environments against us.
They are. And it leaves us with a really provocative reality to consider as we design the networks of tomorrow.
What's that?
Well, if our most trusted communication tools, our foundational engineering software, and our bleeding-edge AI models natively provide perfect camouflage for malicious activity, does the future of cybersecurity require us to engineer internal trust out of our systems entirely?
Wow.
Right. If a native Microsoft Edge browser talking to a native SharePoint server can no longer be inherently trusted, we are moving toward a world where zero trust isn't just about authenticating users.
Right.
It's about ruthlessly interrogating every single process and thread executing on a machine, completely regardless of its origin.
That is a massive paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Moving zero trust all the way down to the process level.
It has to happen.
And is exactly why we do these deep dive briefings. Thank you for joining us today on Cyber Mornings Daily. We really hope this intelligence arms you with the insight needed to hunt these threats in your own environments. Stay curious, stay secure, and keep questioning the systems you trust.